WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshall guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, very Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk. You're on 95.9 WATD. My name is Kevin Tachi. I will be with you this evening until 8 p.m. We have a great show lined up for you. Of course, we'll get right into the meat and potatoes of the conversation right after we do a final check of traffic in just a couple of moments. But when we get back, we, of course, the staple of the program, the State House Report. We'll kick things off speaking with State Representative Dave DeCoste. This is an opportunity to catch up with Dave, find out some of the things that he's been working on within his district, the 5th Plymouth District, which I believe is Rockland, Hanover, and Norwell. Find out some of the things that maybe he was able to secure or maybe any amendments he was able to file while the House was discussing and debating their budget just a couple of weeks ago. We look forward to talking to Dave about that. Then we're going to speak with Jeff Hall. Jeff is a spokesperson with the American Red Cross. Not sure if you know this, but we are coming into that time of year that it gets really difficult to ask folks to donate blood because folks are getting ready to plan vacations now. What also complicates things is we're cruising out of a pandemic. We're in the middle of a global pandemic, which also creates more further complications. We'll talk with Jeff about that. We'll also talk with him in regards to volunteers. How has COVID affected volunteers and folks who assist when it comes to seeking blood donations? That coming up in just a few minutes. Hour number two, we're going to re-air an interview we did with a very good friend of ours who works for the Enterprise and none other than Jim Fenton. Jim, we did an interview with Jim in the middle of March, and the discussion was a bit of a somber note. The passing of marvelous Marvin Hagler, a former middleweight boxing champion who suddenly passed away at the age of 66 before his 67th birthday, which is actually coming up this weekend. You'll get to hear that interview that we did with Jim. Why are we doing that? Why are we re-airing it? Well, following my interview with the interview that you'll hear from Jim, we will speak with Dave Wedge. Dave, who we know is a best-selling author. He also does public relations for the city of Brockton and for Brockton Mayor Bob Sullivan. And we'll get the details of a very special event that the city is having. It's going to be like a star-studded tribute to marvelous Marvin Hagler. It's going to be happening on his birthday this Sunday coming up. So stay tuned for those details, as in fact we will speak with the one and only Dave Wedge. Stay tuned for that. Right now, though, time for us to take a look at the roadways being brought to you on this end by Brendan Smoke Shop, online at brendansmokeshop.com. with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and Weymouth.
Well, thanks, Kevin. The expressway southbound's jammed from the tunnel to Columbia Road. Then you're on the brakes from Bryan Ave to the split. Northbound's an easy 10-minute ride from Braintree to Boston. Route 3 is south, the usual delays from the expressway to Union Street. 93 is clear either way between Braintree and Canton. And Route 24 south, that's a 17-minute drive from 93 to 495. This report is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. At Whole Foods Market, take 25% off all sun care and bug spray through May 18th, plus an extra 10% off for Prime members while supplies last. See more on the Whole Foods Market app. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. I gotta give credit where credit is due. Al Gamash & Son, Michael Green Painting, and Foley Electric. Without these local contractors, Brennan's Smoke Shop would be ugly. Every store we open, these guys get better and better at building them out. Take the new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, for instance. We put the display cases and the huge, absolutely enormous walk-in humidor on the same light switch. Thank you, Foley Electric. Justin Gamash, the & Son, put a ramp in for the two-wheel dolly that carries the product from our local wholesaler, William Zoll & Son. Michael Green Painting. Oh my god, dude. They're like thing one, thing two, thing three, thing four, except they put paint on, not take it off. Come see their workmanship at our new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, June 2021. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and soon New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk on 95.9 WATD, and this is the first segment, traditionally known as the State House Report, because we draw from individuals who work within, you know, our state capitol and who work in state government. Usually they're representatives, they're senators. Sometimes we're fortunate to get a constitutional officer like the governor, the lieutenant governor, and maybe even the treasurer. Who knows? The auditor is also a regular guest. Joining us today is State Representative Dave DeCoste, representing the 5th Plymouth District. Representative, how are you?
It's a great to be here tonight, Kevin. Thank you for having me on.
You know, there's so many things that are going on, so many things that are happening, knowing that we are just a couple of weeks removed from the budget process for the House. Also knowing that here we are, we're in the springtime. And, you know, if you're a realtor, this is your time of year, of course, depending on housing stock. I know you're somebody who you and I have had discussions about 40B, but I don't know if we've ever really drilled down into the housing market and received your take on it, because you have such a diverse section. Your district is such a diverse section and a cross section of individuals, depending on what their median incomes are.
Well, you brought up 40B, so I'll touch a little bit of that, because lately politically that has been really an issue that has reemerged, particularly in Rockland and in Norwell. And we can take a look at the situation. And by the way, all along the North River, because there is there's a River Marsh project potentially that will put over 100 units in along the North River. A while back, not even a decade ago, there was in the town of Pembroke, there was a very similar private project proposed, and which was rejected out of hand because it, for a number of reasons, but largely because it posed a threat to the North River and the ecology there. Well, now through 40B, and this is primarily why I remain among the most foremost opponents in the legislature of subchapter 40B, those developers have been able to avoid most of the zoning and, to be honest, most of the environmental regulations that would accrue to any other building project on the river. So we are working, and this is a team effort. It's myself. It is certainly Josh Cutler. We filed a bill recently sent a letter up really pointing out the shortfalls of this project. And we signed everyone involved, the state senators, and certainly and Rep. Cutler, myself, Rep. Carney, we're all on the same page. As you know, on the South Shore, the political parties don't make a difference because we have so many common interests in terms of regional projects and development that we're working. But you mentioned 40B. That's something in Norwell, Pembroke, Hanover, Marshfield, Scituate, that they're working really to mitigate on the marsh. Now, I'll give you an example of a good 40B that we're working towards and that I have been involved in quietly for over a year, actually 2 years, I guess, coming up. And that is the current 40B project to renovate the Holy Family School. And it's going to be entirely affordable housing. And Holy Family School in Rockland, right in downtown Rockland. I think the entire, it's safe to say, the entire community is on board. I haven't heard of anyone speak against it. But this is a project that makes sense, a project that is already tied into the sewer system, a project that would, is the infrastructure's there. It's just a matter of renovating the building. And it will provide over 55 housing. And it may be the extent that we'll have to check, but quite often the over 55 is occasionally paired with housing for developmentally disabled people who are capable of independent living. But the bottom line is it was, and Norwell is like that, as is Rockland in their housing authority. So that type of 40B, we're working full speed ahead, and we're hoping to get going this year and actually getting it underway and completing it. Now, there's another 40B in Rockland that is the Shingle Mill 40B that will have many, many units in a very compact space up in the general vicinity of Home Depot off of Pond Street in Rockland. And that has gotten a huge, you could say there's an enormous amount of concern throughout the town, not only with the perceived, and I would agree with them, the inappropriateness of the project, but also the strain, potential strain on the aquifers. The plan now is, because Rockland is under such sewer and water limitations, the plan is for them to drill a well. Well, it's right next to the Hingham Aquifer, and there's some concerns there. So we've got good 40Bs, bad 40Bs, housing and so forth. It's a tight issue here, but homes are still being sold.
You know, you mentioned during your response about the housing authorities. Would you say the one thing that doesn't get headlines or stories aren't written about is how underfunded housing authorities are and their effectiveness when it comes to housing in communities?
Yeah, and we're looking at that. This year, the Housing Committee is chaired by, as a matter of fact, Senator Keenan, who represents Quincy all the way down into Rockland, and Representative Arciero on the House side, who is up in Westford. I will be the senior Republican on the Housing Committee. And my hope is, and I've spoken, I think there's general agreement across the political spectrum that we need to rethink the way we fund housing authorities. And, every year we try to get earmarks, but there's no central funding authority for the housing authorities. There was some legislation that will provide some funding, and we're working to get it. But our housing authorities are really the unsung heroes in terms of providing genuine, low-cost housing, good quality housing in appropriate areas. In Norwell and Rockland, Hanover does not have a housing authority, but the housing authority just do a terrific job in both cases. And I've made a point to try to partner with both of my housing authorities to provide, to provide the support they need, and to the extent I can, coordination with state agencies to make sure we get as much as available in any special programs. And I'm in contact. I think it's safe to say if I'm not in contact with them weekly, I'm certainly in contact with them biweekly to see what I can do. And I make it a point to go down just as state representative and have a presence in both my housing authorities on a pretty regular basis.
If you're able to, depending on what you can do for in the fiscal 22 budget, mm-hmm. What does additional funding do to assist housing authorities, especially in your district?
Good question. They have emergency maintenance. They have emergency maintenance requirements, and then just have the ongoing requirements of like your house and my house, that things become run down and need replaced. Fixtures stop working, plumbing stops working. Really, at some point, you've got to remodel things like bathrooms and kitchens and so forth. And that's where they run into problems. In the case of Norwell, there were some problems regarding the septic system that are ongoing. And this year in Norwell, we got a small earmark to help them address an electrical issue in one of their buildings. In fact, they had to evacuate the building because they had some problems with the electrical system not being grounded properly, and people were getting slightly shocks from the plumbing. So we've got some money coming that way, but I think, again, across the political spectrum, in the legislature, there's a realization that not only do we need to, you know, streamline funding, but funding's probably going to need to be, you know, plussed up. And you cannot get more focused, better, affordable housing for those most in need than what you find in the housing authorities.
And so I would ask you just for quick clarification. So we're talking about housing that is owned by the community and overseen, but they provide it for folks to be able to rent. Are you talking about this programs for folks who own homes, but if you need monies to take care of your septic and stuff like that?
Well, you know, that's another great program, but I was talking about the housing authorities, just as you said, administered by the town housing authorities, separately elected boards. So they're, you know, when there are plenty of separate board of selectmen, board of school boards, you know, water authorities. Norwell has a water authority, not so in Hanover. And of course, Rockland has the Abington Rockland Authority, which we will be working with quite a bit this year to help them get in. That's something that, you know, when we talked before the show, that is something that we're going to have to work with our congressional team and our two senators to make sure when this infrastructure bill comes out, that we have a funding to address the concerns, not only sewer, but water and water quality. That's also become a big issue. And as you mentioned, it also ties directly into housing, because people have, you know, a good point in all the towns. And what in the world, if we have poor water quality, why in the world would you be hooking more housing up to the already poor quality, already strained system we have? And it's a legitimate concern.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with the state representative, Dave DeCoste, representing the 5th Plymouth District, as he joins us on a regular basis, or representing the fine folks in Norwell, Hanover, and Rockland. Yeah, I want to kind of shift our conversation from housing to transportation issues. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're probably one of the biggest provisions when we look at budgets, what communities look at, the regular Joe cares about is, you know, what's being done when it comes to my roads, my sidewalks in my community. You know what? My street hasn't been paved in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. That damn pothole has cost me more front end, repairs than anything. What are you going to do? That's the thing that the Joe or Jane voters care about. Give me your thoughts on the transportation issues in and around not only your district, but the South Shore that have been a part of a conversation for this year's budget.
Well, let's talk locally, I guess. First of all, this past year, we passed a bond bill, and there's over $1 million set aside to rebuild and redesign and rebuild the area directly in the vicinity of the Hanover Public Library Town Hall. That intersection there was great probably in 1820, but mm-hmm. in 2020, it's a danger. And not only is it a danger, you know, just for traffic, I have been almost hit a couple of times crossing over there. But that has a enormous amount of school children in there. You've got, you know, grammar school right up the street. You've got the stables that have, you know, regularly have horse, you know, events there and showings. And so you have a ball field right nearby. You have the congregational church and their Sunday school. You have the library. You have the Hanover Police Boys Club. And then right next to it, of course, you have the Hanover Fire Department going in and out very quickly. It is an accident waiting to happen. You know, thus far they've had small accidents there, but we're looking, and that will be one of the things that I'm really stressing with the administration, Governor Baker, Lieutenant Governor Polito, to release that money and get a design going. And I hope, who knows, this year, maybe next year, to get something designed, either a light there, a rotary. The MassDOT seems to be favoring rotaries, or as I guess the popular term is roundabouts now, right? But we, and then, which are technically a bit different. But in any case, something to calm and slow down traffic so we'll be able to address there. Now, one of the bigger issues is the issue we're looking at, the Southeast Expressway Corridor. And I will just simply say that's another area that, you know, we're looking for federal funding. I will also be, we're putting the letter now together for the entire Plymouth County Caucus. And we are going to ask, our two senators and Congressman Keating, who, of course, we have a great relationship with, and he's always been responsive, to take a look at possibly earmarking money for sound walls right along the barriers, right along the Southeast Expressway, Gardner Street in Rockland, the Stetson area of Norwell, and, of course, over John Adams Drive in Norwell, where just a huge amount of vegetation was removed. And in fact, the highway was moved closer to the neighborhoods. And there are stretches there where a sound wall would really be adequate. And this, by the way, continues all the way down to the bridge. There are areas in Kingston and Marshfield and Plymouth, so forth, that can use it. And by the way, right up to Braintree, of course. So we'll be trying to team up with our federal legislators and try to get money allotted at the federal level to adopt that. Again, you can't, it won't come unless you ask. And they are planning. It looks like they're going to have a very aggressive spending program. So it might be something that we get, and certainly something we'll ask for. And then there were other things. Joe Moschino, as you know, has done a great job in protecting the ferry. Now, it's going to be interesting to see how the traffic patterns have evolved once the COVID bans are lifted and folks are going back into the city. It will be, you know, very interesting to see how much telecommuting has developed such that people won't be going back to the city or will be going elsewhere. I know that there is always stress to kind of help our gateway cities. An example down here of gateway cities would be Taunton or certainly Brockton. Fall River, New Bedford, you know, it's great places to live. And I'll tell you what, it's a lot better to drive south on Route 3 in the morning and south on Route 24. And so, you know, certainly the mayor, I spoke to Mayor O'Connell in Taunton not too long ago, and that's something they're looking at, maybe encouraging people to move up. So the development will be interesting, and, you know, the ferries will be back in business. And Rep. Moschino, Senator O'Connor deserve a great deal of credit because they really led the fight to keep those ferries going. So now, of course, the interesting thing with the ferries is we need more parking. So we need more parking. My aid goes into Boston through, you know, the Abington parking area and all through the parking for both the MBTA and the ferries. We need to take a look at it and build more of it, if where and when possible. And I should add, by the way, I'll be going going to work directly with the PNB bus people. Last Thursday, the PNB just began their service with their brand new buses. The things look like rocket ships. They're really impressive. And so, and Wynn Sargent of PNB really deserves a lot of credit because he held the company together and has kept it going, and now is reintroducing commuter service. So that's another, you know, small component to this, but we need to make sure that PNB remains in business, remains strong, and potentially they'll be looking at some new sites in addition to Hanover locally, where they park and ride, and we'll have to take a look at, you know, that and supporting those type of things.
Yeah, we're speaking with the state representative, Dave DeCoste. He has been our guest. A representative, we're plumb out of time. You have just a quick 30 seconds just to say something in closing, especially to any of your constituents or the folks, or the fine folks who tune into this particular program.
Well, you know, I think I'll talk to the three municipal, you know, governments. And I'd like to congratulate everyone, regardless of the outcome of their particular election. You know, once Theodore Roosevelt talked about getting in the arena, and the man, I guess these days would say the man and women who count are the ones who get in the arena. I want to thank everyone who ran and congratulate all those who have won office and for the school boards and water departments and you know, boards of selectmen. Congratulations to everyone who won and to all of you who ran. And I look forward to working with the newly elected teams in Hanover, Norwell, and Rockland. And, you know, the North River Commission, too. We can't leave them out. We'll be working quite a bit with them because we didn't talk about it. But as you know, we've got to get some funding for them, and there are some issues down at the river. We'll be working closely with them.
He is Dave DeCoste, the state representative for the 5th Plymouth District, joining us here for the State House Report. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. We will step aside just for a moment, but fear not. We will return in just a couple of moments here on 95.9 WATD.
Are you worried about your drinking? Or is someone else worried about your drinking? Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
There is no shame in living with a disease called alcoholism.
Regardless of your age, employment, or any other circumstances in your life, you deserve help from other individuals who understand what you are going through.
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
Call 617-426-9444 or find online meetings at aaboston.org.
Go ahead, indulge yourself. Every Wednesday night, tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both. Because being connected feels good. It's contagious, and I personally want to spread it around.
Don't miss Talk with Francesca, Wednesday nights at 9 on 95.9 WATD.
At South Shore Bank, helping you reach your financial goals is the priority. But helping you strengthen your community is our passion. Service is a commitment, but support is a calling. Success is the name of the game, but sharing success is the only way we win. As a mutual bank, we make sure that what's good for you serves the greater good. Because here, profits are reinvested in our communities. Success, the feeling's mutual. Visit us today at southshorebank.com. Member FDIC, member DIF, equal housing lender.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Well, joining us for today's conversation is Jeff Hall. Jeff is a spokesperson with the Red Cross. And I don't know if you know it or not, but it's been tough days when it comes to having a pandemic and then asking folks to give blood, knowing that we are living with a global epidemic. Jeff, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Kevin. Appreciate your time.
Yeah. So the first thing I want to talk about is blood. And I don't think folks realize how important it is to give blood, and that life has a limited lifespan.
Absolutely. You know, the best way to think about blood is like the milk in your refrigerator. It doesn't last forever. Most blood donations only last about 30 to 40 days. Platelet donations we can get a little bit longer out of, but it is a perishable commodity. And we're solely dependent in this country on volunteer donors. So we encourage people to, if they're able to, and if they feel healthy enough, to come on out and donate, give an hour or 2 hours of their time. And you can, every donation can save up to 3 lives. So it's very important. A very small part of the population of this country donates blood. So whatever we can do to increase the awareness of just how important blood donation is, you know, we're very grateful.
Is there a time of year that you have folks will flock in? I mean, again, prior to the pandemic, of course, where folks will readily give, but then I'm sure that there are times of the year where it's tough to have folks come in and give readily.
It is a cycle. Summers and and the winter holidays, we always see a downturn. People get busy. They have vacation plans, family plans. Fall and spring are traditionally very good times of the year for us. We run a lot of blood donation centers and mobile centers on college campuses, and people just seem to have it in their schedule to make it into a donation center to give blood. So it is very cyclical. We know that summers were always down, and with the pandemic seemed to be loosening up, and you know, the CDC just today loosened up guidelines on masks. So people are, I'm sure, just like I am, anxious to get back to whatever normal was before March of last year. And so, but we really still need their time and their blood donations. So that's what we're just trying to get out and get raise the awareness about it.
I kind of figured that the summertime, the summer months, when folks look to, you know, their leisure time and they look to vacation, that would be a downturn. And knowing that we are cruising towards summer, that probably now is as good a time to get the word out to folks how important it is to give blood.
Absolutely. It takes about an hour to donate a unit of blood. That's from walking in the door, going through a brief health screening. They take your blood pressure, they test your iron to make sure you're healthy enough. And you lay down on the table. I know a lot of people are afraid of needles. I don't tend to look at a needle when I donate blood. I just turn away, and it's a small pinch. And in 10 or 15 minutes, it's all done. And you sit down, you have a snack, and you have... In that time frame, you've really done a lot to help your local community and even the nation. Sometimes people with rare blood types, or when there is a need in another part of the country, that blood can be sent across the nation to help other people. So even if you're on vacation, I know people don't want to probably think about donating blood on vacation, but it takes generally about an hour of your time, and it really does help people across the country.
You know, knowing that we're enduring COVID, I would think that there's a new set of regulations that the Red Cross has is distributing for information as to the folks that you are willingly to accept in as volunteers to give blood. And then I'm sure that there are individuals that you're like going, if you have these medical issues, you have these issues, we say thank you, but no thank you.
Yeah, if people have any question on whether they're eligible to donate, they can go to redcrossblood.org. There's a frequently asked questions tab that they can go through about any medications they might be on. But generally, if you're in good health, even if you're on medication, if you're in good health, you're eligible to donate blood. That's really all we're asking. Even if you've had the COVID-19 vaccine, be it whichever form you've had, if you're feeling healthy today, you can go ahead and make an appointment to donate blood.
It's worth noting that I believe that you're receiving a little bit of an assistance from Hollywood in regards to helping to recruit people to come in and get blood. Do you not?
We are. James Vanderbeek and his wife, Kimberly, went through just horrible circumstances in their life with her pregnancy. And that's one of the leading causes of the need for blood during pregnancy. And you just never know when you're going to need it. And that's why we like to have a supply of it. You know, we have partnerships with hospitals all across Massachusetts so that we can supply that needed blood to trauma centers. May is also trauma awareness month. And you have to have that blood supply on hand in the event of emergency. We've just so many national tragedies that, you know, that's one of the knee-jerk reactions. You see people roll up their sleeves to help give blood to people that need it. It's an important community event where people can really make a difference.
Is it a challenge for the Red Cross to be able to set up donation sites because of COVID, or do you feel that where we're trending in the right direction with folks getting vaccinated and herd immunity, that this might not be necessarily something to worry about down the road?
Well, it was a challenge in April and May of last year, certainly with the social distancing guidelines. Many of our reoccurring mobile donation sites just weren't workable anymore. So we had to rework our partnerships, but we did find places where we could go into, keep social distancing up. Everybody was wearing masks. People were doing their best to social distance. And it was by appointment only, whereas we used to offer walk-in appointments in the past, and that kind of went away. So all those things, you know, as we move forward through this year, we hope that those things start to relax a little bit. But it has been a struggle to get appointments, to get places for mobile drives. But across Massachusetts, we have 7 different donor locations that are brick and mortar, that are there 7 days a week. So if people go to redcrossblood.org and type in their zip code, they can find a blood donation site or mobile drive closest to them, generally within about 10 miles. And the way things trend right now, within a couple days, you can get in and make a donation.
Well, what kind of a budget does the Red Cross have in regards to trying to get the word out and promote this? Especially, you know, I kind of think of it, liken it to trying to get folks to get their COVID vaccination and how important it is. I would think that a good part of the Red Cross's budget to say, hey, while we understand that you're a little nervous about going out and giving blood and having a needle poked in your arm, this is crucial. This could save lives.
Yeah, especially during the summer, you'll see more ad campaigns on the radio and on television as well, encouraging people to donate. But it's partnerships like this, Kevin, that are so important, that we're reaching out into the community and talking to people. You know, those Red Cross workers that are the phlebotomists, that are in the volunteers that work in those centers, they're members of the local community. They are neighbors, and you're out there supporting them as much as you are, you know, the faceless person in the hospital that needs that blood.
We should also probably talk about volunteers. And I would think that while we're sitting here and talking about the crucial drops of life that you're looking for folks to donate, the folks to help assist with some of these drives is probably tough to come by as well.
It is. We call them blood ambassadors. They're usually the folks that greet you as you come in the door. They're taking your temperature right now and having you fill out the paperwork. Many of those folks traditionally are retired that help us out and volunteer with us. And the COVID-19 pandemic did hit that sector hard. And we certainly understand why people weren't as willing to come out and sit in a place with strange people coming in and out and interacting with them. So we're always recruiting for volunteers for those positions as well. It's an important position. It's just to greet somebody, get them in the door, make them feel comfortable, answer a few questions, and let them know what the process is, especially if they're a first time blood donor.
Yeah. And I don't envy you, because I've done several other interviews with representatives like yourself with the Red Cross, and realizing what a struggle it is just to get folks to roll up their sleeve and give blood. And this is prior to a global pandemic and everybody getting sick and us not knowing what's going on again. Something that we hadn't seen in our lifetimes. Supposedly it happened 100 years ago when we had to deal with the Spanish flu. So, and knowing, you know, is the Red Cross seeing any kind of hopefully a way to get the lure folks back, knowing that it was tough before trying to get people into the door to get blood?
Well, we usually have different sponsor opportunities running right now. There's a national company called Suburban Propane. They are offering a it's a drawing, so you can register to win if you donate. Even if you are turned away, that, let's say your iron was not good enough to donate blood. If you come in and make the attempt to donate blood, you're entered to win a travel trailer, which is just a small camper that sleeps five. So that's something one of our supporters is offering right now to people who regularly donate. And we always partner. Amazon is always a great partner throughout the year. They run promotions probably four or five times a year, giving away gift cards to blood donors as well. So we have a lot of sponsors that are able to thank donors. I mean, the Red Cross, sometimes we offer T-shirts, and that's probably one of the greatest things. I always give blood and enjoy getting a T-shirt for it. So we try to give back as much we can, but every donation is needed so badly.
It's interesting you mentioned T-shirts, because I was going to mention that. I believe that in my notes here that, in fact, there is folks who donate later this month, right into early June, will actually get a limited edition T-shirt.
Yeah, there's about a 10-day window at the end of May that run through, I think, June 5th, that we're doing a T-shirt giveaway. If you show up at a blood drive at your appointment, they're while supplies last. So we really do encourage people to come in and donate. It's a nice little thank you that we can do for your time and for your donation.
And is this strictly, and I should have asked you this earlier, but is this strictly blood, or are there other things that are, you also will be looking for donations, platelets, items like that?
We do. Platelets and plasma are the other types of donations you can have. Plasma is generally only at our fixed sites, but you can donate platelets at some mobile blood drives. Generally, when you go to redcrossblood.org and when you sign up for your appointment, you can elect what you're going to donate that day. I would say a first-time blood donor, it's usually the whole blood. It's like, it's traditional, maybe what you saw in high school when you laid down on the green table and you had the needle and it filled up a little bag down beside your leg. That's a whole blood donation. Plasma and platelets take a little bit longer, generally about between an hour and 2 hours, depending on the type of donation. But if you're making a plasma donation and you're sitting in that chair for 2 hours, we generally have things to distract you. Movies, blankets in case you get cold. We try to make you as comfortable as possible and walk out the door feeling almost as good as when you walked in, because we're replacing some of those fluids that you're donating to us.
If somebody has donated in a certain amount of time, is there an amount of time that needs to go by in order for your body to put back what you've donated? If somebody is saying, hey, I want to donate, but I just gave... not too long ago.
It's generally about every 50 days you can make a blood donation to the with the Red Cross. So the easiest way is we have an app like everybody else does. You can go on either the Apple Store or Google Marketplace and find that app, and you can set up a reminder. I know sometimes people don't like the phone call reminders. And if you are a regular blood donor and you use the app, the phone calls go away remarkably. So we encourage people to use the app. It's the most efficient way to find the closest donation to you. And it sends you a reminder right before your appointment.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Jeff Hall. He is a representative, a spokesperson with the American Red Cross. And I thought it was a great opportunity to spread word just on the cusp of summer, because normally there's a little bit of a downturn when it comes to folks giving blood, because, you know, we're enjoying the sun and the warm weather. And the last thing we're thinking about is giving blood. We just got a couple of moments left here in our conversation. Is there anything we haven't touched upon that you want to talk about, or maybe reemphasize something that we were talking about earlier in our conversation?
Yeah, I mean, the Red Cross is really known for two things in the United States. That's blood donation. And we're also known for disaster recovery. When hurricanes hit or wildfires or tornadoes, you see that the classic red vest with our volunteers out walking through the devastation, helping family members try to put their lives back together after they've lost everything. We do that here in Massachusetts about 6 or 7 times a day at house fires. So that's one of the main things that Massachusetts Red Cross volunteers respond to every single day. And the pandemic has been hard on that as well. So we're actively recruiting for folks that want to help their local community members out, basically from having the worst day of their life. When a person loses everything in a home fire, you know, how would the person know even where to start? And that's really what our Red Cross volunteers do. They walk them through the process. They make sure they have a place to stay for the first few nights until you can get in contact with your insurance company and figure out what your next steps are. And we follow those folks along for about a month just to make sure that they're getting back on their feet. That is one of the greatest needs aside from blood right now is we are in desperate need of folks to volunteer. We have virtual positions. We have positions that go out and respond to fires, especially since the pandemic conditions are loosening up right now. So it's one of the best ways to help your local community.
And if folks want to find out more information, if they want to see if there's any donation sites in the area, how can they find out more information?
Yeah, the great ways, if you have access to the internet or on your phone, is redcross.org/MA for Massachusetts. You can go on there and find a link to redcrossblood.org where you can find that appointment time, or you can find out how you can volunteer and other and the other things the Red Cross does for local residents here in Massachusetts, whether it's helping veterans and their families or helping folks after a natural disaster.
Jeff, I want to thank you for joining us for this particular segment and spreading the word, because God knows that somebody will definitely need one of these donations if, in fact, they are, something happens to them that's, an accident or if there's need like James Vanderbeek's wife.
Absolutely. The need is every day. So your donation really helps today.
That's going to do it for this segment. It's going to do it for the first hour of Monday Night Talk. We are going to step aside. And when we come back, hour two of the program. You tuned in to 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
WATD FM Marshfield. WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
If you want to drink, that's your business. If you want to stop, that's for Alcoholics Anonymous.
AA is an inclusive fellowship of individuals all around the world. The one thing you need to ask yourself is, am I ready to do something about my drinking problem? For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, and to find a meeting near you, call 617-426-9444 or visit AA.org.
Tiny of Tiny Sun's Glass. If you're driving along right now and you've got an angry little ding in your windshield.
Ouch!
But good news. We can fix that ding. We'll fix that ding before it spreads. Drive on over to Tiny and Sun's, Route 53 Pembroke. We will fix that ding. Your insurance company will pay.
And that's why I sing the gimme that ding.
So give me that ding. Tiny and Sons Glass will fix that ding. Insurance company will pay.
Oh, that's right.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Thank you. Thank you for keeping your dial set here to 95.9 WATD, home of Monday Night Talk. And coming up in just a few minutes is the interview that I did in March 15th, I believe. And it was a conversation with Jim Fenton, who spent nearly four decades with the Patriot Ledger and the Enterprise, covering a sports beat writer. Fantastic. I can't tell you how much I used to love reading Jim stuff. And Jim even also covered the fights that the Marvelous Marvin Hagler had. And so we will have an opportunity to speak with, we'll give you more details about that in just a moment, but just a little bit of housekeeping here before we give you the rest of the details regarding the second hour here. A quick note, if you have missed any episodes of Monday Night Talk, we've done our best to try to at least upload the latest ones for 2021. We do what we are in arrears for some for 2022. Please definitely be patient, as what I hope to do in the near future is just to try to have a little system where they're up almost immediately right after the particular show, and then you can hear them in their entirety, whether you're listening to them again live or on your smart device, whatever podcast site you're listening to them from. We definitely appreciate the fact that you tune into Monday Night Talk to be able to hear some of the great folks who are a part of this radio program from time to time, or some of the conversations that we schedule that has usually are topics or items that we're all dealing with, and that we're able to bring experts or maybe local people who are in the know to be able to share information. That's what it's about. It's being able to share that information with you, the listener. And if we can, after, you know, you hear the show itself, be able to re-listen to any of your favorite segments, easy enough for you to go to the homepage of 95.9 WATD and click on, all you have to do is actually click on shows or podcasts. I believe there's actually a podcast drop down. You'll be able to find Monday Night Talk. It's definitely that easy. Or you could just go to Podbean. That's where our segments are, if you want to check it out. So thank you in that regards. And we'll, again, we're a couple of shows behind right now, but once we are caught up, we'll give you that note. The other thing is any suggestions you may have for guests. We like to know that we are listening to what our audience wants to hear. MondayNightTalk@gmail.com is usually your best way to be able to send in any advice or correspondence in regards to the show, or any questions. Again, if you have a suggestion for a guest, we'd definitely be all ears in booking that guest. Again, back to hour number two here. Later in the hour, we will speak with Dave Wedge. Interesting enough, I kind of feel that Dave is one of those guys who he's close in age to me. And, you know, I remember growing up and seeing Marvin Hagler. I mean, he grew up, he lived right down the street from me. And I would see him actually prior to him shaving his head, you know, when he was, you know, just getting started with the Petronellis. And we'd see him jogging around. I'd see some of his siblings and they'd be like, ah, that's my brother Marvin. He wants to be a boxer. Well, little did we know that Marvin was going to be a world champion, part of one of the greatest trios, the triangle, as a Goody and Pat Petronelli and Marvelous Marvin Hagler were known as. But speaking to Dave, Dave will give us the rundown of this great event that's coming up Sunday. That's going to be at Rocky Marciano Stadium. Interesting enough, I remember many years ago when they brought the statue for Rocky Marciano, they set it up and they had a big event. Many think that this event Sunday is going to be something similar to that. And it would be nice to eventually see Marvin get his own statue. We'll end up seeing what happens with that. But right now, just to set up which you're about to listen to, and that is a rebroadcast of an interview I did on March 15th with Jim Fenn. Jim, a great friend, and you know, the interview that I did with him was, it was knowing that he was somebody who knew Marvin and can kind of give a little insight on it, really makes for a good conversation to kind of, you know, and you know, the one thing that a lot of us, you know, you, if somebody who followed Hagler, you know, the one thing we loved his championship run. And the one thing that many folks have regret in is, is, you know, whether or not Marvin should have sought a second fight with Sugar Ray Leonard, which he never did. And again, listen to the interview that we, that I did with Jimmy Fenn. As we talk about it, one of those things that resonated with Marvin for years. But that's coming up right now. Again, my interview with Jim Fenn. Please stay tuned for that segment right now. Of the gentleman that I'm about to discuss and talk with is somewhat of a friend, somebody who I've admired for years. I've read many of his articles, being a sports fan, regardless if it was some local sports that were happening or things happening on the national level, or him being a beat reporter for one of the sports teams, the Celtics, you name it. We have a legendary sports reporter, Jim Fenn, joining us, and we're here to talk a little bit about the passing of the marvelous one, Marvelous Marvin Hagler. His wife, Kay, posted a message about her husband's passing over the weekend, and the first person I thought to reach out to was Jim Fenn. And Jim, I want to thank you for joining me here for a few moments to talk a little bit about Marvin Hagler. Not only Marvin Hagler, the boxer, but Marvin Hagler, the person.
Thanks for having me, Kevin. It's definitely a sad day. And, you know, it's been a few years since I've seen Marvin. He hasn't really been around the city too much. And, you know, it just brings back a lot of memories, a lot of good memories of, you know, what he brought to the city of Brockton. He put the city back on the boxing map after Rocky Marciano. And, like, you know, it's just amazing that a city that size wound up with two great champions who are going to be remembered as one of the best in their weight classes.
I would ask you this, in your nearly four decades of sports coverage, what kind of a guy was Marvin Hagler? Anytime you had a chance to cover one of his fights or to interact with him?
Well, I was lucky because the Enterprise office was right across the street from the gym, the Petronelli gym. Used to be Ward Street, then they renamed it Petronelli Way. So, you know, whenever I'd see his car in the parking lot, 6 to 8, they'd be up there training. You know, I'd take a walk over and just, you know, sit down and chat with them and get to know him pretty good. And, you know, then you get to all the fights and, you know, tons of media there. And, you know, he always took the time to talk to me. And he was, he remembered his roots and everything. You know, his, the Petronellis and him, they were Brockton guys. And, they wanted to represent the city as best they could.
It's interesting knowing that, you know, folks don't realize that while Marvin was not born in Brockton, he was a Jersey kid. He was born in New Jersey. Parents moved up here into the Brockton area, that, you know, how he got discovered by the Petronelli brothers, Goody and Pat. What is the story as to how that dynamic trio came together to be championship timber?
Yeah, he moved up here in the 60s with his family. And I remember Goody Petronelli told me they used to have the gym on Center Street. The building, I think the building's gone now, actually. But that was the original gym. And he said one night, Goody said one night he looked around the gym and there was a guy, young kid standing up in the corner against the wall and just standing there all by himself. You know, he's probably 15, 16 years old. And Goody finally went over to him and said, what are you doing here? You want to fight? And he said, yeah, I want to fight. And that's how it all got going. He put him in the ring and, you know, they started him in amateur ranks and Golden Gloves. And he's a national Golden Gloves champion. And, you know, then he worked for them construction. That was part of the whole story. You know, he worked hard all day in construction with the Petronellis. And then he wound up in the gym at night, and, you know, years and years and years of fights and trying, and finally get his break on the national, international scene. And took him a while, but he finally got a championship fight. He drew with Antifermo in his first championship fight, and then a year later goes over to England and wins the title. And just a remarkable story how he basically came up from not knowing anything about boxing, showing up at the gym in downtown Brockton one night, and there he was, top of the world.
Yeah, you're talking about, you know, 67 fights, what, 62, 3-2. And you know, he fought, you know, when he fought, you were talking, that's when boxing was boxing. You look at boxing today, I think boxing is, it's kind of lost its way. But I feel as though we're fortunate to have had a guy like Hagler represent the city of champions, Brockton, Massachusetts.
Yeah, you get a chance, read a great book by George Kimball. He used to write for the Boston Herald. He wrote a story, book, The Four Kings, about that era, you know, with Hearns and Hagler and Lennon and Duran, and how they were all interacted. And, you know, none of them ducked either one of them. They all fought each other, and, you know, great fights. You know, Hagler, Hearns, who's going to ever forget that? You know, I remember being in the second row for that fight and just looking around at all the media and everybody just up on their feet for three rounds. And then, of course, the Leonard-Hagler fight, you know, everybody's still talking about that 30-something years later. So you're right, it was an unforgettable era.
And if you're just you're tuning in, we're speaking with the great sports writer, Jim Fenton, is my guest, and we're talking, we're memorializing Brockton boxer, marvelous Marvin Hagler, as he passed away at the age of 66 years old. You reference the Hearns, Thomas, Hitman Hearns fight, and what a thrilling 8 minutes. But there was a point in time in that fight that Hagler could have, you know, if they wanted to call it off because he was bleeding, was there not a point where that Hagler was a little nervous that he could have lost his title right there and then?
He felt it actually in the third round. Referee Richard Steele had a look at the cut above his, I guess it was above his eye, above his nose near his eye. And, you know, Steele, Richard Steele asked him, can you see? And Hagler said, I'm not missing him, am I? And then after the fight, they asked him about the blood coming down his nose and how he fought through that. And he said, when I see red, I turn into a bull. And he finished hands off probably a minute after that. They stopped the fight. I mean, he had been through a couple, you know, the decision with Antifermo. So he knew he was at risk if he didn't finish him off, you know. So that was of all the events I've covered, that's going to be in the top three.
Definitely a thrilling time, and every time I watch it, it gets better and better. Knowing that he only had a few fights left after that, what made him finally want to fight Sugar Ray Leonard? Sugar Ray was out of boxing for a few years, but the story behind the scene was that Sugar Ray did keep poking and prodding here and there about possibly fighting Hagler. Was that the big fight that Hagler always wanted?
Yeah, he was always, I don't know if jealous is the word, but, you know, Leonard was the, you know, the golden guy from the Olympics and got all the commercials and everything. And even when he walked away from boxing in the early 80s, you know, he was still getting all the attention. And even because he was just sitting ringside doing commentary, he was almost as popular as Hagler was. And, you know, that was it. That would have been the crowning achievement to beat Sugar Ray Leonard. I think the Hearns fight gave him, everybody finally recognized him as an all-time great championship. But, you know, I think he realized that beating Leonard would have gotten that off of his back. And, you know, it's, of course, we all know how that ended and controversy and, you know, left a bit of taste in his mouth.
Watching that fight, how many times have you watched that fight to see if, in fact, Hagler won or if Leonard was the one, was victorious on points? Where do you, have you found yourself on a seesaw, or do you feel unanimously each and every time you watch it that Hagler won that fight?
Yeah, I think he probably won a close decision, but I mean, he gave away the first four rounds. I mean, to this day, I still don't know why they didn't send him out there and attack like he attacked Hearns. I mean, Leonard hadn't fought in a few years. He was rusty. And if you put a full assault on him in the first 30 seconds, he's going to start backtracking and maybe you get him hurt right away. But he just danced around for three or four rounds and got himself behind. And, you know, the middle rounds, he started fighting, getting his rhythm. And then at the end, you know, Leonard would just dance around and wouldn't get touched. And, you know, he won on style points, I guess, in the eyes of two of the judges. It was tough. I mean, it was, it could have gone either way, but, you know, being the champion and not get, I mean, he barely scratched the surface on Hagler. I mean, how do you take away a title from him like that?
Now, did you have a chance to get comments from Hagler or from the Petronellis after that fight? And what was their reaction?
The night of the fight, I think they were just stunned disbelief. And, you know, they couldn't believe that that had happened. That was like their worst nightmare, to lose a close decision in a fight where Hagler hadn't been hurt or, you know, even been really taking too many solid punches. And but I think as the weeks and the years went on, they really got bitter about the whole thing. And, you know, again, like I was saying before, the way to rectify that was to get a rematch with him and show once and for all who was the better fighter. And they chose not to do it. And Marvin's the one that chose not to do it and walked away from probably $15, $20 million at that time.
Do you think it was more about his legacy, that while maybe he could take the decision, losing the decision, but what if he wasn't successful the second time around? Do you think that had anything to do with it?
It might have been. You know, the other thing was he was just probably bitter with the whole game, the Vegas at you know, being in Vegas and losing the decision like that really upset him a lot. And you know, I remember they sent me out to cover the Hearns Leonard fight. I think it was a couple of years after, well, maybe it was a year after Hagler and Leonard had fought. And you know, if Leonard had beaten Hearns, they were gonna, you know, up the talk on a rematch. And Marvin was out there, and you know, he just wasn't interested. It was unbelievable. He just didn't want any part of fighting again. And you know, walking away from that kind of money is unheard of.
It's kind of interesting how he actually retired and walked away. I mean, he wanted to become an actor, you know, goes to Italy. And I mean, it's kind of interesting to kind of go from being a boxer to going to another country to hopefully become a big name in, you know, on the big screen.
Yeah, I mean, I could tell throughout his career, he got more and more comfortable in front of the camera, and he really liked the media aspect of it. And, you know, he got a couple of shots to do movies over there, you know, and he was doing commentary on BBC for boxing matches in England and all over the country, Europe, actually. So, you know, he found something he liked to do over there, and he was spending half of the year up in New Hampshire. And, you know, he had quite the life for himself.
What, I mean, post boxing, I mean, how often did you have any interaction with him? Did you have a chance to talk with him every once in a while just to see where he was at?
Once in a while. Last time I saw him was at a Celtics game, maybe three, four years ago. He was sitting in the front row. And before that, I saw him at the Campanelli Stadium. The Brockton Rocks retired his number of victories he had. They put it out in the outfield next to Rocky Marciano's 49 for his 49 wins. You know, and he'd be around once in a while, but he wasn't really in Brockton that much. I mean, you know, he took up residence in Milan. He was over there for half a year, and up in near North Conway, up in New Hampshire for half the year. So he really wasn't around too much.
You mentioned about George Kimball and the book that he wrote. Interesting enough, I remember working at WBET with, I think, a mutual friend of ours, late Mayor Bill Carpenter, who actually gave me the book, and I had a chance to kind of thumb through it and look at it. There was never a book written about him. Why is that?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, a couple of people have asked me that. You know, I don't think he was ever really interested in that for some reason. You know, it'd be tough to get him to sit down for a few days and talk to him. So, you know, maybe now, who knows, maybe now it'll happen. But yeah, that's interesting how that never happened. His book's on everything now, you know.
That is true. And also knowing that, interesting enough, I mean, his brother, Robbie Sims, still resides in the City of Champion. I would be curious how Robbie is handling things, knowing that his older sibling had passed away.
Yeah, I haven't seen Robbie in a while either. It's, you know, he put together a nice career for himself, you know, living in that shadow, and had some big fights. He fought Roberto Duran out in Vegas, and, you know, Vinny Paz he fought. So I'm sure it's tough for the whole family, the mother and Robbie and everybody.
Putting it in the retrospect, how do you look at and how do you put Marvin Hagler's career into perspective. You know, this is somebody who also is in the Boxing Hall of Fame, is he not?
Yeah, I went up there and I covered that back in the 90s, yeah. He was up there, he was inducted probably about less than 10 years after he went in, he finished his career. So he's he'll be remembered as one of the top middleweights of all time, you know, with Sugar Ray Robinson and, you know, Monzon, certainly Carlos Monzon and Marvin. I mean, you know, he lost three fights and the last one was controversial and, you know, he went years and years and years without even coming close to losing. So he made quite a name for himself.
You know, Rocky Marciano was known for how he was amongst the people and with the people when he wasn't in the ring. How do you feel that Marvin left his impression on the people in the city? Looking through social media over the weekend, another individual you and I both know, John Marion, you know, kind of talking about, you know, a great guy like Marvin and what he meant to the city. How do you feel that residents who remember him will, you know, share their thoughts and memories?
Yeah, he made a lot of friends in Brockton all the years he was there. I mean, started a scholarship fund at Massasoit Community College. He used to come back. He was here a few years ago for that. You know, they hand out scholarships to students from Brockton. And, you know, I remember going to Vegas and the fights, you know, you'd walk down the strip, you know, a few days before the fights and all you'd see were people from Brockton. I mean, they'd pack up and head out to Vegas for a week and bet all their money on Marvin to win. And most of the times, except for that last one, they won money. So even over in Italy, I went to a fight in Italy with them, San Remo, and, you know, it's a crew from Brockton over there making that trip to watch a fight over Mejia. So, you know, people really, they followed his career pretty closely.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you mentioned Massasoit because I know an individual, a gentleman who had worked in the administration, Richard Cronin, who actually posted, I had put a post about Marvin's passing, and he actually mentioned that Marvin did give back to the community, so much so that he actually was a trustee for Massasoit Community College.
Yeah, that's right. He used to show up at the events when they'd give out the scholarships and give a nice speech to the students there, and, you know, Massasoit meant a lot to him.
Interesting enough, talking about his passing, as we have just a couple of moments left here, anything that we haven't mentioned in regards to the passing of Marvin and remembering him during this conversation?
I just think the hard work and dedication he put in. I mean, he proved that hard work and dedication can bring you a long way. I mean, he's a guy who kept getting frustrated throughout his whole career. I remember covering him at a fight at Roseland Ballroom in Taunton, dingy locker rooms they had downstairs. And, you know, that was like 30 fights into his career, and he's still fighting in a little club circle like that. Just had to wait and wait and wait, and he had chances to leave Brockton. I mean, the Petronelli brothers who had brought him in and gave him a job. And, so, you know, he could have gone to New York with a different trainer, a different promoter, and, you know, maybe they could have speeded things up. But he was loyal to those two guys right to the end, and they used to call themselves a triangle. I mean, they were triangle strong, those three, and, you know, through thick and thin, they stayed together, and they wound up, you know, making big names for themselves in the world of boxing.
You know, it's interesting. We have a statue that the WBC gave to the City of Champions. Is it possible that maybe the WBC or maybe one of the other factions would be kind enough to have some kind of a monument in Marvin's likeness as well? Is that out of the thought of possibility?
I've heard that, you know, talk going around the city, you know, a few years ago after Marciano's statue was erected there. And I think there'll be a push now for it. I mean, somebody's going to have to step forward. It costs a lot of money for that Marciano statue. It's beautiful there. But it'd be something for the city to have the two of them side by side at the stadium there. That'd be quite an attraction for the city to have two world champions, and like we said before, two guys who are going to remember as the greatest of all, you know, two of the greatest in their divisions.
Before we sign off, is there one little nugget, one little memory that you have of Marvin, maybe a conversation you had with him or a story maybe he might have shared with you that still resonates to you, even more so now in his passing?
I wrote this story last fall. My wedding day was September 27, 1980, when he fought Alan Minter over in England for the title. And my wedding reception was winding down, and I heard a commotion in the other room, and they had the fight on. It was on Wide World of Sports, Howard Cosell was doing it. And so I snuck out of the wedding reception to go watch the last round. And fortunately, Marvin knocked him out in the third round, and that was that. I got back to the wedding reception. And a few years later, when I started covering him, I told him that story. And I said, thanks for taking care of him quick so I could get back to the wedding. And he said, that fight wasn't going to last long no matter what. So he was determined that day.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us to discuss this. I know you actually have a birthday coming up at the end of the month, so I want to wish you an early birthday, if I'm correct, right? You're a March birthday, yes?
Yes, I am. 2 weeks.
What have you been doing since stepping away, putting your pen down as a sports writer? What, you've been doing things to stay busy? Another life for you? What?
Unwinding, hoping the vaccine kicks in so we can start getting outside doing stuff and doing a little bit of reading here and there. And, you know, I'm going to take some time away. I've been working since I was 14, 15 years old. So, and this is my extended vacation right now.
Well, Jim, as always, thank you for your time. Thank you for your knowledge and your insight, especially talking about someone like a marvelous Marvin Hagler, who, you know what, a lot of people, he was a beloved champion, very much like Rocky Marciano. Maybe it was a different era, but it was still, he was somebody who was a man of the people. So I thank you very much for your time.
Okay, Kevin, anytime.
You got it. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
Join WATD on Thursday evening, May 20th at 6:15 as they present Spring Into Action, a fundraiser for the Talking Information Center. TIC is a South Shore nonprofit that provides readings of local newspapers, magazines, best-selling books, and a whole lot more through volunteer readers over the radio to South Shore and Massachusetts residents who are blind or visually impaired. Learn more and bid on some fantastic items right now at TICnetwork.org. That's TICnetwork.org.
Plymouth 400 Inc. continues their mission of education and commemoration of the 400th anniversary of Plymouth's founding with a new television series called Plymouth 400 Conversations. The program will focus on authors, filmmakers, artists, and poets who discuss how the 400th anniversary commemoration influenced their work. Each episode premieres Thursday nights at 7:30 on PAC-TV, but available online for everyone to see the following day. Despite the pandemic, the 400th anniversary commemoration continues into 2021 with great virtual programming now, including this fascinating new virtual series, and live events later in the year. See what Plymouth 400 Inc. has scheduled. Shop for Plymouth 400 anniversary merchandise to share with friends and family, and catch the most recent episode of Plymouth 400 Conversations. Visit Plymouth400Inc.org.
Gotta finish this today.
Cristiano's construction projects typically run smoothly, but this project's pipeline is about to burst.
Yo, boss, where you want us to put this?
To the left. Your other left. John.
Indeed can help him hire the people he needs.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. When you sponsor a job, you immediately get your short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
I absolutely love my dog, but the constant shedding, not so much. But then I got a Swiffer Sweeper pet kit, and it is amazing. These super thick cloths pick up a crazy amount of hair. Just look at all that. And that was from just one swipe. And the best part? Sweeper's so much easier to maneuver than a broom or a vacuum, easily getting around chairs and under the couch. You're right. Now I can focus on you, not your shedding. Swiffer Sweeper Pet Kit. Because shed happens.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Okay, welcome back to Monday Night Talk. As we return, I hope you enjoyed that segment that we just aired, a previous program that we had with Enterprise Patriot Ledger writer Jimmy Fenton, all around great guy. You know, this is somebody who's put 40 years into, you know, his craft as a, you know, a sports reporter. Great hearing his insight in regards to Marvin Hagler. It's almost like, you know, this second hour, as I said to you at the close of the first hour, is more so, you know, it's kind of remembering Marvin Hagler. Marvin Hagler Day being celebrated this coming Sunday, May 23rd. And who else would I want to also talk to about this is a gentleman we've had on him many, many times. He basically is almost, he's sub co-host level, basically. Dave Wedge. Dave Wedge, who not only best-selling author, of course, you know him from the latest projects, The Last Days of John Lennon, done with Casey Sherman and James Patterson. Great book. Also, Hunting Whitey. That was the inside story of the capture and killing of America's most wanted crime boss. But Dave's here to kind of serve as a public relations and talk a little bit about Marvin Hagler Day, maybe share some stories. Dave, sorry for the long-winded intro, but welcome back to the program, sir.
Thank you. Always great to be on ATD. I'm very happy to do the show, and I love my Monday Night Talk. I, you're right. I go way back to the days when Mayor Hedlund hosted the show, and I actually did formally ride in the co-host chair there for a little while. So big fan of the show, big fan of your work, and you guys are great supporters of me and Casey, and also the city of Brockton. And, you know, Brockton really is doing a lot of great things now. As you know, Mayor Sullivan's a great friend of mine, and I'm doing a little bit of work with him to help kind of promote the image of the city. And I'm just real happy about the direction that things are going in Brockton. And this event is the next big thing, really, that's really going to make people stop and think about what a great city Brockton really is.
When you and I were going back and forth as to how to do this segment and give a little bit of preview of this big day, you know, I thought about some of the folks that, you know, could have a conversation, who could join us for this particular conversation. I see Marvin Hagler, marvelous Marvin Hagler, as our champion. And when I say our, I'm saying yours and mine. Generationally, he was the guy that I watched his fights, you know what I mean? And I cheered for him as a kid, you know, in high school, and followed his career, had chances to interview him and talk with him and know the family like Robbie Sims, who he's still a fixture in and around Brockton. You were the quintessential guy, you and Mayor Sullivan, that I wanted to talk to. If we had a chance to get a special guest, so be it. But at the end of the day, you know, the punctuation at the end of the sentence, Dave Wedge is here to kind of share his thoughts on the passing of Marvin Hagler and giving this champion, I mean, City of Champions, giving him a great day.
Well, yeah, well, you know, I'll first just give you my personal feelings, and I'll tell you about the event on Sunday. You know, pretty much everyone who grew up in really New England has some sort of personal connection to Marvin Hagler. Everyone in our generation, there'll be Generation X, you know, people that grew up in the 70s and 80s and early 90s. You know, for myself, I mean, I was 10 years old in 1980, you know, so I remember Marvin winning the title in England. And I remember seeing that fight when, you know, the British hooligans rained down bottles on him at Wembley Stadium when he beat Alan Minter to win the title. And there was big racial implications there. There was some racist comments made about Marvin Hagler before that fight from Alan Minter in his camp. And I just remember seeing that and saying, wow, that's awful that they're treating him that way. He just won the middleweight championship of the world. And Marvin Hagler never set foot in England again. And a lot of people don't know that. He was a man of principle. And he, after that, he got what was his, which was that middleweight championship. And he took it from that guy who treated him with so much disrespect. And, you know, frankly, the fans of England treated him horribly, and he never went back again. And, you know, as a little kid, seeing that and realizing, you know, my dad telling me, like, he lives in our city. He's right over there. We would drive by Dover Street where he lived, and it was really, you know, astounding to me as a little kid to understand that someone who was famous grew up in the same city where I lived, you know. So that was really my first impressions of Marvin Hagler. And then as his career grew and he started defending his title and becoming a major celebrity, you know, his legend was growing in Brockton and beyond, obviously. And my dad went to all his fights in Vegas and Atlantic City. And he took me to his fight at the old Boston Garden. I saw Marvin fight against Vito Antifermo in that famous fight where Marvin split Vito's head wide open. And Vito got like 50 stitches in his forehead after that fight. And, you know, there was a title defense. And I just remember being a little kid and being around the fight game and, you know, the old Boston Garden, smoky, people smoking cigarettes and cigars. And it was all, you know, it was the last vestige of old time boxing, really. But, you know, to my original point, everyone in New England has a connection. Remember, he also lived for a time in Hanover. Some of his kids grew up in Hanover.
Yep.
Marvin trained down in Cape Cod, and my co-author Casey Sherman, actually his family was involved in the fight game down in P-Town, and Casey actually carried spit buckets for Marvin when he was sparring down there, training some of these fights. And so, you know, you mentioned before that in Brockton, everyone grew, you know, the adults older than us, our grandparents and parents grew up telling stories about Rocky Marciano, and you know, my dad was Rocky Marciano's paper boy, you know, and things like that. And everybody had a connection. Well, our generation has that with Marvin Hagler. So it's a very sad day that he's passed. He was far too young, 66.
Yep.
And the last thought, Kevin, is, you know, he also had a place up in North Conway, New Hampshire. And a lot of people from the Boston area go up there to vacation and ski. And it's funny, I went up there several years ago and went to a place called the Shannon Door, which is a great Irish bar in North Conway, and was getting some pizza. It turns out, what do you think they have for pizza? Bar pizza. It's Brockton bar pizza that they sell up there because the guy that owns the place has some sort of connection to the South Shore. And lo and behold, there's all sorts of Marvin Hagler memorabilia all over the walls of the place signed by Marvin. And I learned that he's a regular there, and he had a house right up the street. So Marvin really touched every corner of New England. He was a true people's champion. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing that the city's going to honor him on Sunday.
Yeah, it's interesting to mention about honoring him. The last time we had an event of this magnitude was the unveiling of the Rocky Marciano Stadium, the statue.
That's right,
at
yeah.
the stadium. And this, I think, is going to be similar to that. It's going to be held at the stadium. You got Peter Zimbler is going to serve as your MC. You got a boatload of individuals from the fight game who understand the fight game, from you know, probably a great champion in his own right, to Bernard Hopkins, to Stephen A. Smith, you know, the gregarious voice on ESPN. Al Bernstein, to Mike Lynch, and even Ron Borges, who wrote for the Boston Scribes and would talk boxing all the time. I mean, he's a historian. That's one hell of a lineup to be coming and talking and remembering a guy like Marvin.
Yeah, and of course his family, his mother will be there speaking. His brother Robbie will be there. There's a lot more celebrity guests that we're going to be announcing in the coming days before Sunday. You know, the boxing game loved Marvin Hagler, you know, and every boxer that you follow on social media or whatever, after he passed away, they all had incredible things to say about him. I think a lot of people respected Marvin because of the way that he ended his career. While it ended on a sour note, that controversial quote-unquote loss to Sugar Ray Leonard, I think a lot of people respected that he walked away from the game. He was disgusted with that decision, and he wasn't going to play that Vegas game any longer. And he got out with his pride and his wits. You know, he didn't hurt himself, and he went and he did other things in his life that made him happy. And I think a lot of fighters respect him for that. With regards to this event, Kevin, remember, too, that we are coming out of COVID. And, you know, Brockton has been hit particularly hard by COVID-19. you know, 450 deaths, I believe, and one of the highest infection rates in the state. So it's time for Brockton to get outside and celebrate a little bit and honor someone that means so much to the community, especially a man of color who, you know, wore the Brockton badge prouder than anybody and, you know, represented a majority minority city. And a lot of the young kids growing up in Brockton today would do well to do their research and go watch the old tapes of Marvin Hagler and listen to some of his interviews and hear the way he spoke and watch that Alan Minter fight and understand the oppression that he dealt with in that particular fight and overcame and showed how to be a tough, resilient person. And that's really what we're celebrating on Sunday is that spirit of that really is the city of champions. And, you know, it's going to be a really historic day for Brockton. And I hope people come out and enjoy it.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Dave Wedge. And we're talking about the star-studded tribute to marvelous Marvin Hagler. I believe the day has been picked because not only was it recently deemed Marvelous Marvin Hagler Day, but it's also the champ's birthday, right, Dave?
That's right. Yeah, you know, Governor Baker was in Brockton at the Shaw Center doing a tour of the vaccination site shortly after Marvin Hagler died and presented that proclamation to Mayor Sullivan proclaiming May 23rd, Marvin Hagler's birthday, Marvelous Marvin Hagler Day in the state of Massachusetts. So that's the perfect day to do it. It's going to be beautiful weather. We'll have some more details that I can get to you, Kevin, about, you know, COVID protocols, but there will be, you know, social distancing requirements. There's capacity limits at the stadium. The stadium holds 12,000 people. So we're allowed to have 25% of that under the current guidelines. You know, as you said, there's some great VIPs there. We're going to have the choir from Brockton High is going to sing. There'll be a beautiful, beautiful video tribute that's being put together as we speak, with a massive LED screen that's going to display that so everyone in the stadium can watch it together. That'll include some of, you know, some incredible footage of Marvin Hagler and some great testimonial videos from incredible figures in the boxing world. And, you know, it'll be live streamed as well on Brockton Cable, and that link will make available, Kevin, so you can share with your viewers and listeners.
I would ask you this, and I referenced it earlier in our conversation. Last time we had a significant event that honored boxing legends was for Rocky the Statue. And I'm asking a rhetorical question of you so we can kind of spitball this, because maybe down the road, one of these boxing factions, whether it's WBC or WBA or the IBF, maybe they might consider it. But do you think that there's a chance that we could see a magnificent statue of Marvin Hagler someday gracing one of our, whether it's up at the, you know, next or near Rocky or somewhere else in the city?
Absolutely. I know it's a priority of Mayor Sullivan's. We've talked about it many times, and we're actively working on ways to make that happen. We hope to have some news on that front soon. And I know that, you know, his mother, for one, is all for it. It's long overdue. You know, Marvelous Marvin Hagler was not a perfect person, but neither is anyone. And I believe that he does represent, you know, the best of what Brockton represents, which is resilience and commitment, and dedication to being great and being a champion. And that's what he did in his life. And he did it in the ring. You know, he had some personal problems in his life from time to time, but generally he was a great role model. He, you know, carried himself with dignity and respect. And I think that, you know, again, these young kids growing up in Brockton, in this city, in this time we're in, coming out of a pandemic where they sometimes feel like they don't have any hope. All they need to do is look at a guy like Marvelous Marvin Hagler, look at his story, how his family left Newark, New Jersey to get him away from the trouble that he was growing up around. And they got him to Goody and Pat Petronelli, who saw the talent in Marvelous Marvin Hagler. And Marvelous Marvin had that commitment to work with them and listen to them and accept their teaching. And they worked together and they trained him into arguably the greatest middleweight of all time and really one of the greatest boxers to ever live. Undisputed middleweight champion for 7 years. That's going to be hard to duplicate. I think that, you know, a statue memorializing him and all his accomplishments somewhere in Brockton will happen at some point. It's just a matter of when and how, and we're working on it. Like I said, I know the mayor is 100% committed to making this happen.
And I think it's worth noting is Hagler, you know, you look at the boxing game today and how it compares. I mean, then in the 70s and the 80s, I feel as boxing was, you know, it was on the last great days of the sport. Now, is there a rebirth for boxing? Some would say yes. And speaking of boxing, and you had mentioned the Petronellis and the training, we know that Goody and Pat are no longer with us. Will we see the Tony Petronellis or any representation from the Petronelli family at this event?
Certainly they've been invited and, you know, they'll be recognized if they attend. So yeah, we're certainly hoping they do. Yes. And, you know, with regards to that era of boxing, you know me, Kevin, pretty well. And obviously Marvin was one of my great sports heroes as a kid. It was like, you know, he was right up there with the Patriots, the Red Sox, and the Celtics for me, you know, you know, it was a very special era for many reasons. There was, you know, no internet. So you could literally, the fights could happen and you wouldn't know what happened until, you know, you could tape it and watch it later. So, you know, you wouldn't know until the newspaper came out the next day or if someone happened to tell you. But so it was, these were worldwide massive events that captivated the imagination of sport. And whether it was a Mike Tyson fight or a Marvelous Marvin Hagler fight, or Roberto Duran or Sugar Ray Leonard or Tommy Hearns, they were must-see TV. And this was the dawn of the pay-per-view age. They created that. So all these, you know, these guys, Jake Paul and these young guys that are out here making millions and millions, Floyd Mayweather and even the generation before them, De La Hoya and Pacquiao, they all owe a huge debt of gratitude to that group of boxers that I just mentioned. Marvelous Marvin Hagler was one of the first boxers to really become a major celebrity and make that real money. And he was very proud of that. You know, he went on David Letterman. He had, you know, commercials for Right Guard, you know, and he really built a personality and a brand at a time when a lot of boxers weren't doing that. So today's, you know, social media influencers and boxers and all that, they should do their homework and look at an OG like Marvin Hagler and see how he helped pave the road. You know, him and Tyson were really the first two guys to do that stuff. And remember, when those fights happened, when Marvelous Marvin Hagler got into the ring in that pre-fight, you know, those pre-fight announcements, it was so such a spectacle. You know, he was just an incredible figure to watch in the ring, and you just knew that something exciting was going to happen. And his fights were just that. They were just very exciting.
And, you know, an event like this, requires community partners. And I know that there are a number of folks who are sponsoring this event to make it happen. Do you want to take a moment to recognize some of the sponsors of this community event?
Yeah, for sure. You know, this event would not be possible without Copeland Toyota. Todd Copeland over there at Copeland Toyota has been such a champion for the city of Brockton. You know, they've donated, they've made a very, very generous donation to the city to really pay for this whole event. This is only the latest thing that Copeland Toyota has done for the city. They recently also created some paid internship programs at Copeland Toyota. So young kids at Brockton High can learn that business and work there, but not only just learn, but get paid, which is a huge deal. So Todd Copeland's done so much for the city of Brockton, and, you know, he'll be a part of this historic event. And we, you know, from me and the Hagler family and the mayor, the city, we all thank him for his commitment to this event. In addition to that, Bertucci's has very generously donated some food and beverages for the family, the Hagler family, and the dignitaries that will be there. And then we've also got Lyft has offered discount codes for rides to and from the event. I'll get you that code. I believe it's going to be Marvelous, but when people log on to Lyft and they put in the code, they'll get a $10 off coupon to go to the event on Sunday. And again, Kevin, I'll get you that code so you can share it with your listeners and on social media and all that. But, you know, just a great community collaboration. Peter Zimbor and the Hagler family are really putting together quite a show. And I think people are going to remember this day for many, many years to come.
And again, the event that Dave is talking about is a day that the city remembers. It's a tribute to Marvelous Marvin Hagler. And it's going to be taking place this Sunday, May 23rd, 2 p.m. at Rocky Marciano Stadium, the City of Champions. And you are asked to event. But again, as Dave mentioned earlier, we still have to observe, COVID, what social distancing can only allow so many folks into the event. I believe that right now the state is at 25%. So that's something to keep in mind. Dave, I definitely want to take a moment to kind of touch base on, we haven't had you on in a bit, so we'll touch base on you, but anything that we've missed or we haven't mentioned about Marvin's special day?
No, I think, the city will be, if you follow the city on Facebook and Twitter, it's at City Brockton for the Twitter, and you can find the City of Brockton on Facebook. We'll be posting information throughout this week with updates on who's going to be there and logistics, how to get there and all that. People should not be concerned about the COVID restrictions. There'll be plenty of room. The stadium holds 12,000 people, so we can accommodate most people, and the police will be there to make sure that we're complying with those restrictions so it doesn't get overcrowded. So and we'll be providing other information. There'll be water there made available. We're not sure yet if concessions will be open. We're working on that because, of course, with COVID restrictions, the concession stuff is kind of dicey right now. So but yeah, by all means, everyone come out and follow the city on Facebook and Twitter, and you'll get all the most recent information.
Again, we're speaking with Dave Wedge, best-selling author. And again, doing a little public relations, helping in the city of Brockton, and Mayor Bob Sullivan out. What's the latest going on with you, Dave?
Well, where do I begin? Casey and I have launched our true crime podcast, which is called Saints, Sinners, and Serial Killers. Right. I'm actually going to meet Casey right now to record our next episode. New episodes post every Monday, first thing in the morning on Monday, and it's available on all podcast platforms. So people can find that if you just Google, you can tell your Alexa, play Saints, Sinners, and Serial Killers, and it'll come right up, and Google it, you'll find it. So that's a big part of our brand right now. We're having a lot of fun with it. We're telling really immersive true crime stories of, books we've written and stories we've covered, as journalists. You know, when I was at the Herald and Casey was at Channel 4 back in the, 2000s. So that's number one. And then, we obviously mentioned The Last Days of John Lennon. So that book is out there that we wrote with James Patterson. We're working on some potential adaptation stuff for that, possibly a streaming series or a feature film. And then Hunting Whitey, our latest book that we did together, just came out in paperback about a week ago. So that's great news. So people can find that in your local bookstore, and it's popping up at airports and all that. So we're very excited about that. And we are working on a series on that as well, a streaming series with some incredible partners. We have Terrence Winter, who wrote Wolf of Wall Street and created Boardwalk Empire. Wow. As the writer on it. And he was also a member of the Sopranos writing team. And the director we have attached to the project is a guy named Brad Furman, who has the number one movie in America right now called City of Lies, about the LAPD cover-up of the Biggie Smalls murder and the Tupac murder. So we got a great team there. We're out pitching the studios as we speak, and we hope to have a big announcement soon on where that show is going to end up.
Interesting. The first thing you mentioned, the Saints, Sinners, and Serial Killers. I believe that the gentleman who helps you produce it is actually a WATD alumni, Mike Joshua.
That's right. I'm going to be walking in to see Mike in 5 minutes. He's a great producer, doing a fantastic job with the podcast. He's good at the sound design, which is a big part of podcasts.
Sure.
And I think, you know, if people give it a listen, they're going to really like it. We're hearing nothing but good things about it. And, you know, Casey and I love to tell stories and write books and create art. And this is just another way for us to do that.
And if folks want to kind of follow some of the projects that you and Casey, as they are, they're created, as they are announced, do you have a website or social media site that folks can go to?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we do. We have fortpointmedia.com, fortpointmedia.com. We post a lot of updates there, but on social media, they can just find me at Dave Wedge, and Casey is at Casey Sherman 123. And then obviously all our projects are on Facebook. We have personal pages, and then we have a page for Fort Point Media as well. So that's where we post most of our stuff. And obviously Instagram, we post a lot on there as well.
Excellent. Well, Dave,
we're busy. Half my life, it seems, I'm posting.
Well, I definitely thank you for taking a few moments out of your busy schedule to talk about the big event coming up this Sunday at Rocky Marciano Stadium, but also even kind of give us a little bit of an update as to the things that you and Casey Sherman are working on. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. And, you know, please, everyone come out. I hope to see you there. I got a VIP seat set aside for you.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Dell Small Business.